Right now it's about to get warmer because it's time to talk food. It's time to talk with Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. It's 18 here. But I'm going out anyway.
That's right.
I'm getting my vaccine today.
Well, congratulations.
So I have to go out because hard to get appointments. In fact, I don't want to go into that. But I'm not a vaccine chaser. I decided I wasn't going to let finding a vaccine take over my life. But I managed today. Anyway, many revelations this week. I'm on the phone with my cousin talking. She's remodeling her kitchen, which she's been doing for many years but hasn't done. She did get a new refrigerator. But we're talking range hoods and ventilation, and I'm saying how I have a lot of trouble with making, you know, really great meat because it smokes up not only the kitchen but the whole apartment. Plus, the last time the smoke alarms went off in here, we opened the door to let some of the smoke out, and they set the alarms off in the hallway. So the neighbors came out to find out what was going on. Anyway, I say, Erica, you know, I've tried two or three range hoods now. None of them really do these recirculating range hoods, and they don't really work. And she confessed that she illegally has outside ventilation in her apartment. Anyway, she said, but I have a solution, perhaps, for your smoke problem. Why don't you try doing the reverse sear? And now, I know about the reverse sear as something you do with a rib roast, for instance. The theory is that if you cook it at a low temperature, it's not a theory. It's actually, I've read studies on this. I've tried this many years ago. It's totally correct that when you cook meat at a lower heat, it will retain its juices more and shrink less, hence a juicier piece of meat. And the problem is you don't get that nice flavor from the browning of the meat on the outside. So the reverse sear is you cook the meat on a low temperature until it's done or nearly done to your taste. You can measure that with a meat thermometer. I use other methods. Confess. I used to have like 3 instant read meat thermometers, and somehow they've all disappeared. So I guess I have to go buy a new one. I can do that online. Anyway, you cook until it's almost done. Let's say if you like a medium rare meat, take it out a roast. It should go to if it's like a rib roast or any kind of roast beef, 120. Will give you rare, and if you add on the few minutes it's going to take at very high heat to give you a nice crust on the outside, it'll eventually be medium rare on the rare side. So that's the reverse sear for a roast, but I never even tried it. Cooking, for instance, which is what I did on a thick pork chop, I have not had the greatest success with pork chops lately, mainly because the same old reason, there's not enough fat in pork to make it juicy anymore. But I'm going to try this with a supermarket pork chop, but I happen to have some really good Berkshire pork chops. I spied them in the butcher case, and they were that rare thing, a T-bone pork chop. And by T-bone, I mean there was both the loin piece, the short loin piece, on one side of the bone, and on the other side of the bone, a T-shaped bone, is a hunk of the pork tenderloin, very tender piece. Not as flavorful as the other side, but very tender. So those look beautiful, and so I bought them. I cooked them on a rack so that there's some air circulation around them, on a baking sheet, on a rim, on a sheet pan, and for 30 minutes at 250 degrees, And then I seared them in a, pun intended, searingly hot a black iron skillet, meaning I let it preheat until the skillet started getting smoky. And then I put the pork chops in right out of the oven. And it only took about 90 seconds, a minute and a half on each side, to get them gorgeously brown. Did not have a lot of moisture loss, as I saw on the sheet pan. There was very little moisture loss. They were incredibly juicy. Of course, it was great pork to start. As I said, I want to try this with a supermarket pork chop, which I know is not going to be anywhere the quality of meat that I bought. You know, I only do this because I like to report to you all. Not because I'm dying to eat a supermarket pork chop. So I have not had a lot of luck with them. And I've cooked them. I'll tell you, the one way I like to cook a supermarket pork chop I can't eat right now because of the carbohydrates involved is breaded and fried. Nothing bad about a breaded and fried pork chop. The breading manages to keep all those juices inside. And also, remember, if you're my age, the advice when we were young was to cook pork until it was white. Do not cook pork until it is white. It is safe to eat when pink and juicy, as these pork chops were. 30 minutes at 250 degrees, and then a good sear. Oh, by the way, I like to do this even with when I'm not reverse searing. By the way, I'm going to try this reverse sear with a good steak, too, and see. I have to reduce the amount of smoke, because even the strongest ductless range hood does not pull out enough smoke to make a dry-aged prime steak. And that's what my goal here. I don't have outdoor space. The one thing I miss in my apartment is no outdoor space. Oh, I should say, if I had an outside duct and a nice, really strong fan over it, over the stove, I probably wouldn't need the outdoor space. So that's one revelation of the week, the reverse sear. I have to thank my cousin Erica for that and for also obsessing over her kitchen appliances as I do. The other thing was, this is something I've been wanting to cook for weeks and weeks when it dawned on me that I could eat this on the keto diet, shrimp scampi. Now, you never get enough shrimp scampi in a restaurant, which is why when I was consulting to Shelley Fireman, the great restaurateur who I worked with on several places, but Bond 45, when it was on 45th Street, was the prime place. And Shelley said, you know, you never get enough shrimp when you order shrimp scampi. So let's do a dish called lots of shrimp scampi. And then we had to figure out how to put a lot of shrimp scampi on the plate so that it looked like a lot of shrimp scampi, but didn't cost a fortune. The fact is, shrimp in the restaurant business are like one of the cheapest ingredients, foods you can buy. And shrimp in our life, as normal consumers, don't seem to be inexpensive at all, but not a revelation. Well, maybe it will be a revelation to you. I've given up on buying, quote, previously frozen shrimp, which at least 90% of the shrimp in the market have been previously frozen. Why would you want to buy a frozen shrimp that somebody else defrosted? You know, truthfully, you don't know when it was defrosted. It could have been sitting there 2 days, defrosted, after it was frozen. Not a fresh shrimp, not a good-tasting shrimp. If it tastes like anything at all, it'll taste like, you know, bad shrimp. You're lucky if it tastes like nothing at all, which is what most shrimp taste like, nothing at all. So I buy frozen shrimp only these days. And by the way, I have tried The only fresh, well, in quotes, shrimp that I have bought in recent memory were in the fall, the Gulf shrimp come as far north as North Carolina, and I was able to get not previously frozen, a wild-caught Carolina shrimp at my market, and they were really good. And they're big, big shrimp, like Gulf shrimp often are. So, but the other day at Whole Foods, they sell, I must say, really good frozen Gulf shrimp. Yes, you have to peel them yourself. They're in the shell. If you like to devein, do that too. I didn't see a discernible vein on any of my shrimp, so I wouldn't bother. I don't bother, period. Unless they're enormous shrimp, and you know, you only have to do five of them or six of them, whatever. And anyway, so a little over a pound of shrimp is lots of shrimp. So I think these were 10 really big shrimp each, 20 shrimp. They were 18 to 20 to the pound. And they were at Whole Foods, which we always think of as an expensive store but really isn't. I think they were $12.50 a pound. The best price at the fish market was $15 a pound, the best. And I forget now how much the same shrimp defrosted by Whole Foods and sold as previously frozen were more expensive than the actually frozen. And, of course, if you don't want to eat 2 pounds of shrimp, they come in 2-pound bags, you just take out what you want. They're all separate. They're not in a block. And you can either plunge them into a huge pot of boiling water, in which case they won't take long at all to not only thaw but to get cooked, maybe 5 minutes if they start out frozen. Or you can thaw them out yourself, which is what I did. So here's a trick, a revelation to some. If you thaw out foods on a stainless steel surface, they thaw quicker than on any other surface. And stainless steel, by the way, isn't even that conductive. But I've tried this on my granite countertops. They don't thaw as quickly on granite countertops, like a package of frozen chicken, for instance, as it would on stainless steel. So 20 shrimp fit very nicely on my oval stainless steel platter. I laid them out, and they were thawed enough in about an hour to be able to peel them. So then I put them in on a baking sheet with my 20 shrimp with literally one stick of butter melted. But I wanted to prep this ahead of time. I forget what we were doing, but we were going to be out. We were going to come home. We'd want to eat lunch right away. So I prepped this ahead of time by chopping up relatively fine 3 enormous or 4 just enormous cloves of garlic. A shrimp scampi is nothing but butter and garlic, as far as I'm concerned. And this is what my mother used to do. She was on a shrimp scampi kick for a long time. And I see why it's so easy. You just chop up all this garlic, and I put it in the pan with the melted butter, and I let it sit there for hours until I was ready to cook the shrimp. And I heated the butter again, so that it would be nice, would be liquid, because by the time I got to it, it had gotten slightly firm. And I poured it over the scampi, over the shrimp. I know shrimp scampi because the word scampi in Italian means shrimp or kind of shrimp. That was saying shrimp. And of course, jumbo shrimp is one of the all-time best oxymorons. Because we always use the word shrimp to mean little, but so how could they be jumbo? Anyway, so jumbo, you take your shrimp, whatever size they are, pour over the butter, stick it under the broiler, salt, you need salt, and 5 minutes is all my shrimp needed. I flipped them over after 5 minutes and did the other side for another minute, and then they were perfect. It depends on the size of your shrimp. You have to figure this out. It was, and then, oh, so what we had with that was another, this is a revelation, asparagus from Mexico. I've said many times that I've become a globivore. I will eat anything in season anywhere in the world. I mean, we have the advantage of getting things shipped in from all over the world. And I saw these asparagus at Whole Foods for $2.99. That's a, like at the peak of the season price. So they look nice. I figured, what do I have to lose for $2.99? A pound. It was a big bunch because they were skinny asparagus. They were terrific. And I did nothing but boil them in some salted water. These were six-minute spears. They were very, very tender, but still, you know, vibrant. And we dunked them into the garlic butter from the shrimp scampi. That was a real keto dish, but anybody could enjoy it. Of course, if you wanted to add potato, rice, or pasta, or just a hunk of really good bread to mop up those buttery garlic, that might be my choice of carbohydrate there. Really good crusty bread. Anyway, so this is another revelation of the week. I bought tomatoes, not at Whole Foods. They were a good price. They looked good. And I'd never seen such large tomatoes on the vine. These were those tomatoes. You know, Marshall, you know these tomatoes. You see them all the time.
Yeah, they have them at Le Bon's on the vine, yes.
Yeah, on the vine tomatoes. But these were enormous tomatoes on the vine. So I thought, what the hell? Again. What do I have to lose? I could use a nice tomato in my life. These were really, really good tomatoes. And there was a sticker on one of them. They're from Maine. In the store, I was trying to figure out where these were from. I always like to see where they're from. And if I'd known they were from Maine, I might have been skeptical because, you know, I haven't really had a good tomato from Canada, and there are a lot of those out there. Of course, they're all grown in greenhouses, but I really, the same brand of tomatoes grown in Canada could also be grown in Mexico, so I always opt for the Mexican ones. I mean, since the Mexicans themselves domesticated the tomato, which was a wild plant until they got a hold of it, we're talking pre-Columbian, before Columbus. Cortez, by the way, mentions in his chronicles of his log of his explorations in Mexico about how the Mexicans ate tomatoes. And by the way, they ate them then the same way they do now, like in what we call pico de gallo, chopped up with onion and chili peppers. And so it's always funny to me that even though Cortez and the Spanish knew about tomatoes, they didn't eat them for a couple centuries, and neither did Italians eat them for a couple of centuries because they thought they were possibly poisonous. Anyway, Maine tomatoes, if you see them, they're beautiful red big tomatoes, and you don't have to do anything to a tomato like this except maybe put a tiny pinch of salt on it.
You know, I've been buying my tomatoes off the vine now for years. That's the only tomato.
Yeah, but they're not always good, Marshall.
I know,
just
but
because they're on a vine,
but it makes,
you know,
it makes,
and they look good, though.
It makes me feel better.
I agree. They look very good in a bowl on the countertop.
Yes, there you go.
So, and sometimes I buy things just for that because, you know, it's cheaper than flowers.
That's right.
and then sometimes I'll even eat it. So I had another revelation this week. Let's see, reverse here, tomatoes from Maine. Ah, so not quite a revelation, but my neighbor complained. She didn't really complain. She said, oh, I made your recipe for fennel with tomato paste the other day, but she's a single woman. She said, but it makes so much. And I'm thinking to myself, why did she make the whole recipe? I mean, it called for three fennel. She's one person. I find one fennel bulb is enough for two people. So I made the dish with a single bulb of fennel. And I usually make this with my very special Sicilian tomato paste. But for whatever reason, I'm not even remembering, I bought a tube of Mutti. It's a good brand, Mutti, Mutti. Tomato paste, tube tomato paste. And even though it comes in a tube, and you can keep it in the refrigerator for much longer than you can, for instance, a can of a tomato paste, and who uses a whole can at one time? It's a problem of storage. I bought the tomato paste in the tube, and I really, it doesn't last forever. So I want, in fact, there's a last day of use sale on the Muti tube, and I was surprised at how close it was to my purchase date. But anyway, it's there, and I want to use it up. So I made the fennel with this. It went great with the pork chops. So here's what I did. By the way, with pork chops, you need, Bob always thinks you need something sweet. I think you need something acidic. So this serves sort of both, because fennel is a sweet vegetable. You know, not sugary sweet, but it has a sweet edge to it. And the tomato paste provides you with some acidity. So I took my one, admittedly large bulb of fennel, and I cut it into slices through the root end so that most of the slices stick together as a slice, and the ends, of course, do not. They end up falling apart. And I layer first the fall-apart piece. Oh, I put a tiny bit of olive oil on the bottom of the pan, put in the fall-apart pieces at the bottom, top that layer with very thinly sliced onion. You only need a very small onion, or a half of a regular small onion is enough for one fennel bulb. Slice it as thin as you can, and strew about a third of the onion on the fennel bulb with a big pinch of dried oregano and salt. And I like hot pepper, but black pepper is fine, a little black pepper. And then the onion, and then dabs of tomato paste. Now, it ends up, the tube is very good for dabbing, because you just squeeze out a little bit. And with my other tomato paste, I really have a problem, because it's stiff. Anyway, you can use sun-dried tomatoes, work perfectly in this recipe, but dice them up small. And so put some of those on. Then put a little bit of oil on and make more layers. Another layer of fennel, onion, oregano, more tomato paste, oil. You use up a nice amount of oil. It's a good amount. You can't stint on the oil with this. Once you've got all the fennel in there and all the everything, put about a half a cup, two-thirds of a cup of water. I like to pour it down the side of the pan so as not to disturb all the stuff that I put in. And then cover the pan, put it over medium-low heat, and once it starts simmering over medium-low heat, there's water in there, you can increase the heat a little bit. And then after about 10-15 minutes, tip the pan, spoon some of the liquid over the top. Eventually, your tomato paste will dissolve, and you're going to end up with not a sauce, not at all a sauce, but nice flavorful juices. And I end up usually having to add, even when I make this three times as much, I often end up having to add a little bit more water to the pan to make sure that the fennel gets thoroughly cooked. It should be soft in the end. And your juices should be homogeneously tomatoey delicious, but not, as I say, tomatoey enough to call it a sauce. In fact, when I made it the other day, I let the water cook out a little bit, and really what we had was fennel in delicious oil, which you're allowed on the keto diet. You know, you can eat fat. So that was a lot of cooking this week.
You know, it's funny.
And I didn't even tell you everything.
I cooked for the Super Bowl, and my because of my diet, I cooked. I made like four or five tacos, a bowl, a small thing of chili, I keep forgetting that I've been on this diet for almost a year now. I only ended up eating two tacos and like two spoonfuls of the chili because.
Good for you.
Because I'm not that hungry anymore.
Good
but
for you. You lose your appetite.
What I want to pass along to you, though, how stupid is this, Arthur? I go to a lot of different websites to look for recipes and stuff. One woman posted yesterday, she rotisserie-ed chicken, okay? And she was upset with the rotisserie because the chicken kept flopping around. So one guy said, did you tie the chicken up? She goes, what do you mean tie the chicken up? And he responded to her, hire a cook. Hire a cook. How can you rotisserie something without,
you know. But I wouldn't go as far as hire a cook.
Well, he was just being sarcastic, but really, I can't.
I know.
You would figure once the rotisserie started turning around and the legs started hitting the electric and stuff, you'd stop it. You'd figure you'd stop it.
You would think. Look, what have we learned from January 6th?
That's right.
There are really a lot of very stupid people.
Oh, gosh, I tell you.
They actually take their own pictures while they're committing crime.
I know. The FBI doesn't even have to.
This has got to be an IQ problem, right?
It's a social
media. I'm not using the word stupidity lightly.
It's a social media problem. People complain about their
rights. No, I think it's an IQ problem.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You're right.
You're giving them too much credit.
You're right.
You know, who would. Yeah. What crook do you know takes his picture while he's committing a crime?
That's it. All right. Well, more revelations for us next week.
Maybe. Maybe not. But I am going to reverse sear some other meats this week.
I've been doing the
I'll report on that for sure.
I've been doing the reverse sear for a long time because I love using cookware that cooks slow, and so I braze everything and do it first.
Now, braising is not the same thing.
I know.
This is not at all braising. This is using a low temperature to. And no, this is not braising. No liquid involved. Braise means liquid.
Yeah.
You sear and then liquid.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I haven't reversed
yet. Is that clear?
I have to reverse. I have to listen to the show back.
Listen, I have a scientist who lives downstairs from me.
Yeah.
And she called me with a cooking question yesterday. She rarely cooks. In fact, I meant to say, who are you cooking for? You never cook. And she's actually a real scientist. And she was amazed to learn that there's science behind cooking. So there is science behind cooking. And braising is the technique we use when we have meat that is not tender and needs to be tenderized. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I'm going to the doctor. Hi.
All right, take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven this morning here on Robin Hood Radio and robinhoodradio.com. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.